You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Ben Standing here for another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. Hope you guys had a great weekend. The Wizards begin real play, well, real fake play, Monday night. They are at... I got to get a jar to put a dollar in every time I say the name of the wrong name of the arena. Of course, the Capital One Arena the Wizards will be playing in Monday against a team from the Chinese Basketball League. I will be there to take a look at the Wizards in action, and we'll see if Tim Frazier is there. Point guard missed the last couple days at training camp with a mild groin strain. Doesn't sound like he's going to play, but I can promise you that he will be here on this here podcast in just a few moments. I talked to Tim Frazier in Richmond when I was there for training camp, so we'll talk to one of the newest Wizards. We've already talked to Mike Scott and Jody Meeks, the two other primary pickups this offseason. Tim Frazier rounds out that group. And in addition to that, I will do something I didn't really do last year, and I probably should do more of this. And I want to get sort of the fan take on the overall scene with the Wizards. Not maybe not necessarily every transaction, everything about the team, but I wanted to get some perspective on what it is like to be a fan, to go to games. And so to help me start that off, I had a conversation this past week with a friend of the podcast, Jack Kogod, a.k.a. Unsilent, on Twitter. Former season ticket holder, definitely a Wizards fan. So we spoke about at length about the atmosphere, going to games as a fan, the good, the bad, and we did talk about the team. We talked a bit about Kelly Oubre specifically. So we'll get to all that here in just a second. As always, if you want to make sure you don't miss any of the podcast, subscribe on iTunes or anywhere else you do your podcasting. If you want to talk to me on Twitter, it's at Ben Standig, or shoot me an email, bstandig1@gmail.com. Let's get right into this here. Tim Frazier, obviously, to me, of the three new additions, he's the key. He's the biggest key, because last year they had virtually no point guard play behind John Wall. I think that's been changed with Tim Frazier, but we will see, and we'll see when he gets back from his injury. So here we go. One of the newest Wizards, Tim Frazier.
Appreciate your time. Let's start with the obvious. Day two of training camp. You've been to other training camps. What has this day two been like? New team, new situation. What's this been like versus some other camps you've been to?
I can just speak on this one, man. This one has been great. We hit the ground running yesterday right from the jump. We focused on defense. So I think that's going to be our staple. We're trying to be one of the top defensive teams in the league. From there, we put in some plays. Man, we put in, I want to say a handful of plays already. We've been able to run them. The guys are getting after it. And I think the biggest thing with this team is that everybody likes each other. Everybody's the camaraderie of everybody is easy to see. And I think that helps the team, makes the teams great.
Yeah, this isn't breaking news when I say that last year they really struggled at the backup point guard spot behind John.
That's what they say, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it affected everything a second unit, John's minutes and so on. And I think people are looking to you to be the solution there. What for you when you come in terms of running the second unit, if that's the role, what's your mindset with that? What is the key thing for you as a point guard to help that second unit get better?
Honestly, I've been playing game of basketball for a long time. I'm just trying to get better every day. Like I said, I had the opportunity to play behind, one of the top point guards in the league. Coach Brooks is, point guard as well, helped me out as well. He's trying to just basically ease me in, tell me what, how he expects things to be done, and I'm going to go out and do that. I think one of the biggest things in myself and being able to stay in this league is being able to adapt to different roles. And I'm just trying to figure out what my role is. And with the second unit, it's not just on me. It's all five of us out there on the court. All five of us want to be. Everybody that's in that second unit wants to be that much better than they were last year. And I think that's the ultimate goal. For everybody that raises their game up, everybody does their job and continue to work hard, man, we'll be fine. Like, I know everybody's been saying that it's you know, we need to back a point guard, a back a point. It's not. It's all five guys going out there and play well, play hard, and give those, you know, those starting five guys some rest.
Definitely true, but the backup point guard, I'm sticking with that. But in terms of that second unit, I know you knew some of these guys have been playing against them and so on, but who maybe on that second unit has surprised you so far, something that they do or just the way they go about their business? Anybody kind of surprised you at this point?
All of them, man. Like I said, this is one of the first times I keep harping on the whole team camaraderie thing. Everybody's just together. Everybody's working hard. Guys are doing well. And I can just speak on, I know for a fact, all us new guys, Mike and Jody, for sure, man, we've been trying to, you know, get accustomed to everything, working in, putting in the time, asking as many questions as possible, and I think that's going to help us out a lot, you know, having us new guys be able to be hit the ground running when the game starts.
You mentioned Scott Brooks. Obviously, he was a former NBA point guard. Right. But he wasn't just a point guard. It seems like you guys would have something in common the way you guys came up, had a sort of, to some degree, battle the odds to make the league. Have you already sensed a kinship with him just sort of based on that connection?
Oh, that'll come. I think right now we're just focusing on, you know, getting, you know, this stuff, you know, getting ready for the season to start. But for sure, you know, he, you know, I've heard his story, read his story, seen his story, you know what I mean? And I want to talk about it and see, you know, the heartaches and the troubles and the ups and downs he went through. You know, I want to be able to hear his story and we can be able to share some stories.
And then, of course, you know, right here in practice, I'm sure you and John, not so far in camp throughout the year, are going to be matched up head-to-head. So you're going up against, you know, one of the best point players in the league, regardless of the position. Everybody always says, you know, what was it, you know, knife sharpens knife or whatever the whatever those terms of what
do you, sharpens iron.
That one. What do you sense for you when you look at that just aspect going up against him? What do you think you're going to sort of take out of that?
This is, you know, man, it's a blessed opportunity. Like I said, not a lot of players, as far as backup point guards, be able to get that opportunity to be and learn from somebody, you know, as great as John and who's been doing this as long as John. So, you know, a lot of my thing is just to go out here. Like I said, I'm going to learn, ask any questions as well as compete. You know, obviously I believe that I'm a great player and I deserve to be in this league. And I'm trying to prove that every day. You know, that's how I made it here, is trying to prove it every day. So I'm proving it with him. I'm proving it with Brad, with the rest of the guys out on the court. I want them to know and understand that when we go out to in games that we're going out together in a fight. And they, you know, I'm their brother. I have their back just like they're going to have mine.
I know when you guys are on the road, you're on planes and all that stuff, you got to have some ways to entertain yourself. I need a new TV show on like Netflix or otherwise. You got any recommendations?
Man, I do watch it. I watch a ton of that stuff because I don't have cable, so I watch a ton of that Netflix stuff. So the new season of Blacklist came out, so I was watching Blacklist. I know Brad was watching Game of Thrones, so now I'm going to ask him, so can I get on his Game of Thrones account? I mean, his HBO account, watch his Game of Thrones.
Wait, do you not have cable? Is this a millennial decision? You just don't watch TV enough at home so you don't bother having it?
Kind of, and at the same time, I've kind of just never had it. Oh, I had it growing up as a kid, but, you know, like since I've been in the NBA, it was something that I just didn't want to focus on because I was always like if I was watching TV, then I should be in the gym, so that's kind of how I've looked at it. So I kind of just never got cable. I've either bought like the sports package and that was it.
Right.
So I don't really get all the other channels.
It's a wise call because I have the same thoughts in my head except I pick the couch instead of the gym, and that's why I look like I need to go to the gym and not in shape like you. All right, Tim, I know you got other things to do here. I appreciate your time. We'll catch up and good luck working with that second unit.
Appreciate it, man.
All right, and that was Tim Frazier. Many thanks to him. I think of the three new additions, the primary new additions for the Wizards, I really think Tim Frazier is going to be the key one. They need Jody Meeks' shooting. Mike Scott's play at power forward will be key right off the bat without Markieff Morris. But we all know the Wizards were a debacle last year, backup point guard behind John Wall. It's been an ongoing problem for several seasons. I really do think, though, that Tim Frazier, who I think he's got a little bit of an edge to him. I think it maybe has to do with having to come up through the ranks. He wasn't a draft pick, wasn't the guy, you know, you don't look at him physically and think this guy is an NBA player per se, but he's got game, triple-double last year with the Pels. He can play, and I think he'll be a big addition to this team. More on him, of course, in the days and weeks to come. All right, now, as I mentioned at the top, I spoke with Mr. Jack Kogut, a.k.a. Unsilent, on Twitter, talked about what it is like over the years going to games as a fan at what is the new Capital One Arena, the good, the bad, what maybe organization could do better, what works. And we also did talk about the team, Kelly Oubre. Jack is a Kelly Oubre guy. We got into him. and a whole bunch more. So here we go. My conversation with Jack Kogod about going to games at what is the new Capital One Arena and a lot more.
All right, as promised, joining us here on the Locked On Wizards podcast, a guy who I think legitimately has one of my favorite Twitter handle names. I always was jealous of the people who had a cool name that wasn't their actual name, but it like I don't know, was sort of offered like a state of mind or something funny or what have you. So, Mr. @unsilent on Twitter, Mr. Jack Kogod. Was there some like big meaning behind unsilent? I always like that unsilent majority kind of thing. How did we come up with that name? If you're going to be a Twitter handle, you got to, you know, this is who I am. How did you come up with that one?
Hey Ben, good to talk to you. There's a kind of long story behind the unsilent majority name. It actually is it's an old Rocky IV reference. Paulie at the press conference with the Russians, and it actually goes back for me to I was following a pro golfer trying to qualify off of a mini tour for the U.S. Open, and the caddy handed me a cell phone and told me to call in a report to the golfer's father, and he gave me basically a script to read off of and told me to tell his father that this was the unsilent majority speaking. And when it came time to start blogging and all that, the name just kind of stuck.
Wow, that's a there's a lot there. I feel like you could
as random as could be.
That is fascinating. Did the guy make the tour?
No, it was U.S. Open qualifying.
Right, did he make it?
He bowed out in sectionals. No, he did not make it.
Dagger. All right, well,
hit the ball really far though.
Yeah, I mean, even just to make it to qualifying for something like the U.S. Open, that would be beyond my comprehension. Let alone to actually make it. But like, I can't even crack 100 at Falls Road. So. that's awesome that he even tried. So you're somebody, you've been in the media, you've been a season ticket holder, you follow this team, you know this team. I would from my perspective, like you and I, we know each other a little bit. We don't know each other that well, but we have a Twitter relationship. As seemingly this is how most of my life is these days. I don't really know anybody anymore, but I know them on Twitter.
I think that's reasonable.
Yeah. But you're somebody who knows this team, but I don't think, and you are excited about this team at times, except for those times when they disappoint you, which I know over the years is often, but I don't view you as somebody who is everything is fantastic no matter what. I don't view you as somebody that everything is terrible always. I think you have a good, seemingly fair grasp typically of the situation with those moments of, oh, come on, you're kidding me there. Is that a fair way to, identify your, fandom situation?
I'd like to think so. I get high with the high and low with the lows sometimes, just like anybody else. But I'm always excited about the team, and I'm excited for watching great things happen. I'm also excited for the misery. It's part of being a Wizards fan. It just comes built in, I think. And not to put a downer on my fandom, but accept the franchise for what it is and for what it's been my entire life. I'm 34. I haven't exactly experienced a lot of glory years, and I'll defend the greatness of the great teams to the death and just kind of accept and love the terrible teams for what they were.
You know, those cloud of those word clouds things where, they look at all the words that are said and they put the ones that are said the most often and they make them like the bigger part of the word cloud. I figure for mine over the years, like Curse of Le Boule would be pretty prominent. Like I've said that so many times over the years because that up until the last three or four, that's largely where we were at. No matter what happened with this team, it always went the wrong way. And so, yeah, like you said, it is sort of built in that we're expecting the worst, but at least lately it's been better than it's been for most of that time. I want to get your take on the season and on the off season and so on, but I want to ask you this. Like, one thing, I've been to many games over the years as a fan, but it's been a minute since I've do that, because obviously if I'm going to games these days, I'm going with a press credential around my neck, and I'm not out there with the masses enjoying the game that way. You have been a season ticket holder. I know you do go to games, and I know your wife goes with you, or I know she has in the past as well.
and I'm sort of always curious, and I don't probably ask this enough, is what is the experience like as a fan at these games? Because I know, like, we often talk about, hey, the crowd is good tonight, the crowd is not good, there's not a lot of people here. But from the from your perspective as a consumer, what is the experience like these days at the, I guess, what are we calling it, the Cap One Arena? You told me not to do the full name or you'd yell at me. So Cap One Arena, that's where we're going with?
No. I told you we're not calling it the COA.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, not the COA. Got it.
That's an abomination. I'm calling it Cap One. It's the easiest to say.
Fair enough.
It's going to take me a good 2 years to get used to it. But, yeah, I was a season ticket holder for, I don't know, 8 or 9 years. That ended recently for a bevy of reasons, but mostly a large price increase plus 2 young children coming into my life. So it just really wasn't prudent anymore, or even possible, probably. My experience was probably pretty unique, admittedly. I was very fortunate, my father and I, to go in on some VIP seats, 2 seats, long ago, when I first came back to the city after college and started working. And so I was sitting in the 3rd row, and that's obviously a pretty privileged place to be, and it's a much different fan experience than you would get elsewhere. You would think that that would kind of entitle you to over-the-top awesome treatment from the team and the staff and everyone short of ownership, basically. But it oddly, you know, it wasn't always that way, and that was fine. I didn't need people, you know, kind of catering to my whims or anything like that. But it was just like sitting anywhere else other than the view. There were a good number of season ticket holders who I got to know over the years who sat around me, who I maintained friendships with, online and off. And it's just like anywhere else in the arena. There are good crowds. There are terrible crowds. You'll get there. And, you know, when people are traveling, when it's a holiday weekend, or even worse, when there's a great team in town, you'll have empty seats next to you, or even worse, you'll have seats full of just, you know, the worst kind of Boston, LA sports fans.
Yeah, those are the games.
That unfortunately, there's really no getting away from that.
Yeah, no. I was at the Nats Dodgers the other day, and like good chunk of the crowd was the Dodgers. You know, I've been to Redskins games where I was at the Redskins season opener this year where against the Eagles, and the lower bowl seemed like it was like half Philadelphia fans. And I just ultimately think that is part of the price that we pay for being in this city with, you know, so the transient nature of it, the government aspect of it, whatever have you. I think it's probably on some level less about the quality of the teams and more just about the people who are here. But at the same point, obviously, if the more the Wizards or any of these teams are winning, then, you know, the more you're likely going to get your own fans to plan ahead and buy season tickets or whatever. So yeah, that is just sort of a problematic. But like, as somebody who had season tickets, who goes a lot, did you get, there's always sort of the blanket statement, oh, the Wizards fans, who cares about the Wizards, nobody cares. Did you ever get mad at that, frustrated? It's like, hey, what are you talking about? I go to games. I know people that go to games. We care. We matter. Did that type of thing ever bother you?
Yeah, from certain elements of the local and national media, it definitely bothers me, because the passionate Wizards fans are as passionate as any fans in any sport, you know, to a fault at times, probably. There's great fan support, but I don't chalk this up to DC being a transient city so much as it is. It's a city that attracts people from all over the country for job opportunities in government and contracting in whatever field they're in. You get people who may live here for 25 years who aren't necessarily transient, but they came from Philly. They came from Boston.
Yeah, that's right.
And started families here. They're not going to adopt the Wizards as their team. People don't do that. I wouldn't expect someone who grew up a Wizards fan and moved to Boston to become a Celtics fan. That's a crazy thing to expect of someone. You're a fan of the team you grew up with, and if you change allegiances, that's fine. That's your prerogative. But most people just don't do that.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I've always felt that D.C. is a great basketball town. It's a great high school basketball town. I grew up going to high school games. It was a really good college basketball town growing up. Georgetown has obviously not had the greatest stretch lately, but DC is very much supportive of basketball. It doesn't always translate to the NBA. It's tough to make season tickets in the NBA work for a variety of reasons. It's very tempting when a marquee game comes along to sell your Lakers tickets to cover, you know, what, 15-20% of your total season ticket bill, possibly. It's tempting, and people do it.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it does sort of come down to, is the ticket cool enough to get enough people to go? Like, did you see that 30 for 30 the other day about the Redskins replacement players, but then specifically the short one they had after that about that police sting that they used using Redskin tickets to get a bunch of bad guys under arrest?
I grew up hearing about that story, but I didn't see the 30 for 30.
So part of the story was that, yeah, they lured these people who were, you know, whatever, wanted by offering Redskins tickets because it was such a hard get. And the RFK was smaller than FedEx Field is. And especially in the early 80s when they were winning, it was indeed a really hot ticket. And I think even the people who were from elsewhere, if you wanted to go to a game, that was like you kind of – I suspect a lot of people just sort of went with the flow of maybe not being a Redskins fan, but sort of being part of that community aspect of it because it was – such a kind of a unique thing at that point. Whereas with the Wizards, you know, it's not there consistently, you know, for reasons that we, you know, painfully know over the years. But hey, maybe things are turning around. Three out of playoffs in three of the last 4 years, you know, one game away from the conference finals last year, yada, yada, yada. I'm curious about the ticket aspect again. I'm sure Ted Leontis listens to this podcast all the time, or his people in his office do, I'm sure. He says jokingly. What's the thing from that season ticket perspective, or just a fan going to games? What's that one or two things that you're like, hey, if you ask me, this is what I would do. Like personally, like I know Todd Dybas wants more ice cream in the media room, regular every game ice cream, but that's our cross to bear. From a fan perspective, what's the one or two things that you think that would be kind of a big move?
The same thing that anybody wants in any stadium or arena, you know, periodic upgrades, which I'm sure are coming. I haven't really kept up with changes since the naming rights issue has been settled. But, you know, the maintenance of the arena, food and beverage options, it would be great to get, you know, great local beer and things like that. And that's kind of what draws people into a lot of stadiums these days is really fun food and beverage options. But really it's about the product on the court, and it's about cultivating an atmosphere and maintaining season ticket holders year after year. Like I said, I grew to become pretty good friends with some of the people who I sat around, and it made the experience that much more fun. When I go to a game and I didn't recognize anyone sitting around me, I was never going to have as much fun as I would at an otherwise ordinary, you know, Milwaukee Bucks game where everyone I knew was there.
Yeah, no, I feel that way. And, you know, it's interesting where we sit in for the games. They have us sitting right next to, I don't know what the section number is, but I mean, you can pretty much see us. We're right above, literally above where the Wizards tunnel is. And some of the same fans are basically sitting there all year long, and we've gotten to know them a little bit over the years. The couple that sits right next to us, the wife literally like brought us cookies at Christmas last year. So even though I'm not coming at it from the exact same perspective you are, there is something nice to be saying, hey, how's it going? You know, and you know, I'm not pretending I think I know their lives. We just talk about the Wizards mostly, but, yeah, I'm with you on that communal aspect. It is definitely a lot more fun when you know everybody there. No doubt about it.
Cultivating that isn't necessarily the easiest thing. And I'm sure that ownership, is desperate for that and feels that they're doing a good job cultivating that. And admittedly, I haven't, you know, been going to games the last two seasons, so it's hard to say how they're doing, but it's always something that can be improved. How you do that is kind of the challenge. But it's hard when you have bad teams and you have a ticket freeze where they freeze the price on season tickets for 3 years because they know that they are, you know, looking to the lottery, looking to draft John Wall, Bradley Beal, Otto Porter, and build something. And then once they have that something that people are interested in, then raising the ticket prices. And it's easy to justify. You say, hey, we have had a three-year freeze, and it's business. And they're absolutely right to do that. But at the same time, you could ultimately wind up losing season ticket holders who can't handle a 15% ticket hike. in one go.
Right, right. And it came out today, there was a story on ESPN about how the Wizards were, I think, were one of like 9 teams to lose money last year just in terms of basketball operations. And I'm sure the naming rights situation will probably help, but that they just changed. But
I think the naming rights situation will certainly help, but I think also Ted Leonsis is one of the few people in the city who pays a mortgage on the building rather than renting. So he has made a point in the past of his operating costs are higher because he's paying a mortgage, whereas a rental fee would be much less. But I think he's a couple of years away from owning the building outright, which you'd think would make a massive difference in valuing the franchise. And honestly, I'm not an accountant, but I don't necessarily trust the books on NBA teams. I think a lot has been written in the past about how they have been able to, I'm not going to say cook the books, but definitely present a different picture from what some outside observers might allege.
But before I get to your thoughts on the team, I know you're you're my go-to source for all things Top Chef. I haven't really watched it in the last year, but I have watched it plenty over the years. Mike Isabella, former contestant, former runner-up. He's got the Graffiatos right across the street. If you could have any one former Top Chef contestant have a place in the Verizon Center, who would you pick?
Oh, man. All time, maybe Kristen Kish probably Kristen.
I remember she was like French cuisine or something. Am I right about this? No.
It was high-end cuisine. I don't know if I would necessarily call it French cuisine. But she has been in the media a little bit in the last few years. I don't know what restaurants she has opened up, but I always just remember loving the way the food looked. As for what would translate best to an arena atmosphere, that's a little harder to figure out.
Yeah, it's one thing about Top Chef that's always it frustrates me is the whole point of the whole thing is how does the food taste, and we can't taste the food. It always seems such a weird dynamic to watching a contest kind of a show is that the entire point of the contest that us the consumers, the viewers have no idea. But I guess we're trusting.
It's brutal, but it'll get you to go to their restaurants once they open restaurants.
Absolutely. No, I always want to go to Voltaggio's place up in Frederick, but I end up just going to Chipotle because that's what I do.
It's a lot more convenient.
Probably just a little bit. So let's get to the basketball before I get you out of here. The Wizards had an offseason. Things happened. They added some players. They didn't do anything that crazy, but, things happened. Whereas Cleveland and Boston kind of went crazy, and I know for a lot of fans, they were like, ugh. Great, Cleveland's got, Boston's just got Gordon Hayward, now they get Kyrie Irving. Cleveland, okay, they lost Kyrie Irving, but they arguably maybe are even better this year. The Wizards, what'd they do? Jody Meeks, Tim Frazier. I mean, I don't know, it's not exciting. A lot of people were like, the Wizards kind of did stuff. I've seen some people, like analysts, give them like a D grade for the offseason. I know some fans probably agree with that, maybe others don't. Where are you on the Wizards offseason, both in terms of what they did and both in terms of the excitement or lack thereof factor?
The offseason expectations are always kind of outrageous around here. The team's built around 3 high lottery picks that have gone on to earn, rightfully, very large contracts. And when that's the case, and when you aren't necessarily a marquee free agent destination, as I think it has been fleshed out pretty effectively, the Washington area isn't for the NBA, at least. It's hard to find some of these diamond in the roughs. There aren't guys who want to take a pay cut to come here. And really, the general manager is left scouring for ways to fill out the roster effectively without doing anything that's going to handcuff you moving forward. And the team is handcuffed by the Ian Mahinmi contract. And, if there were a way to get out of it by pulling off some remarkable Kwame Brown for Caron Butler type trade, great. But that wasn't happening, not given the financial implications at play. They got Tim Frazier, who's an adequate or better backup point guard, I would say. The difference between them losing and winning a playoff series last year was their backup point guard. So as long as they addressed that, I was going to be pretty okay with the offseason, of course, assuming they re-signed Otto Porter. Jody Meeks, you don't know what to expect from him. He's the right kind of gamble, though, because he's the kind of player who, if healthy, can come in and be really effective in this offense, on the whether John Wall's on the court or not. He can come out and score, which is – he's a guy who doesn't command the ball a ton in his hands, who can score off of the bench, and they haven't had a whole lot of that in recent years. Mike Scott, I don't really know what we're getting there, but we'll find out. And they did what they could do with what they had, which wasn't a ton. And there were no big trades that they were going to make, that they weren't going to overhaul their roster. There wasn't cause to do so, where Cleveland and Boston felt that they had to make moves because they're in this arms race and they're all trying to catch Golden State. I don't think that the Wizards thought that they were one trade away from vaulting themselves into that conversation. So I think they did what they could and had to do, and hopefully the team continues to improve.
The I've said before on this podcast, if the Wizards are going to go from the 48 win scenario where they're in right now to say 55, really make that jump, it's probably, I mean, beyond good health, it's probably not going to be about John Wall, Bradley Beal, Otto Porter, Markieff Morris, or Marcin Gortat. There's another player who I think is going to have to make a significant leap for them to make that leap. And it's the player who, again, my perception of you based on Twitter and some other things, if you were a, as the kids, you know, put people in these, say somebody's like a stan of something, I would say you are a Kelly Oubre stan. I don't know if I'm right. I think I am.
That's fair.
So I think he's sort of the key in terms of that, making that kind of leap. I think he's the key. What is it about Oubre that has you all in on him? And what's your sense of my take that, like, for them to make that leap, he's going to have to be the one that makes that big leap?
Okay, as far as my feelings for Kelly Oubre, I think, like, it's 50% Twitter bit and 50% I genuinely am drawn to him. I enjoy him. I enjoy his personality, and I enjoy watching him play and think that he has the elements of his game that could translate into something really good down the road. Player development has always been a shortcoming of this franchise, and I think it's the most frustrating element of being a Wizards fan has been, and Bullets fan for that matter, has been player development. So when you see a player like Kelly, who comes into the league admittedly raw, but with the kind of skills to become the 3-and-D player or the athletic wing player that every team in the NBA, you know, you can't have enough of these guys. It's tantalizing, and I just really finally want to see them pull this off. They've had – the Wizards of Ernie Grunfeld has been just railed for his decisions in the past, and I have admittedly gone overboard in defense of him at times.
That's welcome. That's welcome here, by the way. I feel like I'm the one media person in town who – I don't go out of my way to do it. I just look at the facts. There's reasons to defend. So you're free to. This is an Ernie. You can do so here without fear of retribution.
Well, what kills me is when people like to list all of the terrible things that Ernie has done to ruin this franchise. And honestly, there have been missteps. The Mahinmi contract, I still can't really wrap my head around. I tried to get on board at the beginning, but it quickly became clear that that was going to be crippling to the cap, at least. But when people try to criticize him, they tend to criticize a lot of the draft picks that have been made, guys like Nick Young, Andre Blatch, JaVale McGee. And honestly, Andre Blatch was a throwaway second round pick who turned into a regular contributor on some decent teams. He's kind of a putz, but he did contribute, and he was a legitimate NBA player, which you don't always get out of a second round pick. JaVale McGee took a long time to kind of come into his own, but again, he was a rotation player that wasn't exactly a high lottery pick. And Nick Young has found a place for himself in the league. It took a little while and a little bit of maturity, if there is maturity there. It's kind of still hard to tell, but his game has matured at least last year. And none of these guys were high lottery busts. they've had bad draft picks. They've had Alexei Petrov. They had the decision to trade what would have been a fairly high draft pick for, you know, in the Mike Miller deal, which was a mess. And yeah, that was unfortunate. But at the time, they felt that they needed immediate help, and they went out and they made a deal, and it blew up in their face. But it could have conceivably gone a lot better. And anyway, I'm not going to defend all of Ernie Grunfeld's moves, but they're not all bad. That's all I want to say.
Yeah, the Oubre one is interesting because when you look at the ones he's maybe missed on, Jan Vesely is sort of the most obvious.
Oh, I forgot Vesely.
That's all right. Most people want to. That's all good. But like when you look at Vesely, when you look at JaVale McGee, it seems like when Grunfeld misses, he typically misses on guys who are more athlete than basketball player, and that's where it's interesting with Oubre. We're still in the learning process. He's been good enough to think that he will get better, but it's still sort of on the fence a little bit. But it's still that thing. If he can hit on Oubre, what he offers athletically could be massive. But it is another. When they drafted him, I was like, oh, here we go again. He's fallen in love with an athlete. Now we'll see if he can turn him into a basketball player.
Yeah, and it's not the GM's job necessarily to turn him into a basketball player, but you need to surround him with the right people and get him the right development and the right coaching. And with Oubre, I don't think it's just all about athleticism. I think he has a nice shooting stroke. I think he moves around the court really well. He seems to have decent defensive instincts, better than your average one-and-done college player, maybe. He's far from being a defensive stopper, but the ability and desire to do so seem to be there. And, part of me saying it's a Twitter bit, I really want them to hit on a player like Kelly Oubre, and I think he's a lot of fun, and he's, our emotional young man.
All right, cool, man. I definitely appreciate your time. I've already kept you longer than I said I would, so let me get you out of here so you can get back to your family. I will say I just looked it up. Kristen Kish, she went to Le Cordon Bleu in Chicago, so I think I had that in my head as to the whole French thing.
Everyone's got a little French training, I guess.
Yeah, it seems like that's that's part of the deal. When is the next season?
You know what? I changed my answer. Give me Brooke Williamson.
Well, that's who she beat in the.
Yeah, I say give me Brooke for stadium food.
Oh, okay, good.
Kristen for a tasting menu.
All right, deal. There so many of them are in town, so many interesting restaurants. I never have any idea where to go. I may have to lean on you one day to tell me so I don't keep eating the crap I eat and eat something actually good. I may have to lean on you to tell me where to go. Oh, I remember Brooke Williamson. I just looked her up. Yeah, I liked her. She had a good story.
Go to All Purpose before a game sometime if you get a chance.
All Purpose?
Yeah.
All right, no, deal. Done.
Show up when they open. Show up when they open at 5 over by the convention center. Get in, get out. It's worth it.
All right, noted. Got it. Cool, man. At Unsilent on Twitter. Do you want more people following you? Like some people don't want people following them because you're doing your own thing. You want people to follow you?
I'm fine either way.
All right, cool. At Unsilent on Twitter. Follow. Don't follow. Jack's cool with that. Appreciate it, man. Good luck. When you know you're going to a game, let me know. We'll talk, see where we're at that point, and hopefully Oubre, makes you proud.
Absolutely.
Cool, man. Appreciate it. Thanks, man.
Neal gets open for 3. Dagger!
Bobby Tye, touchdown! Bolt drive, Bolt cover shot. Dagger!